I think we're on.
Yes, we are, sir.
This new music is messing me up, man. Like, this intro music is not what I'm used to. Welcome to Gwynn and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Crisello out. We're going to get right to it, I believe.
Yes, sorry. Adam's on the phone right now.
Our Friar Friday guest is, that music is quite
yes,
loud.
We do need to turn down the music. I know Adam's got a million things going on. I don't want to be that guy. All right, thank you, Adam, very much.
Thank you very much. We have Mike Schilt joining us here within seconds.
He's actually on the line right now.
All right. Well, Mike Schilt is our guest here on this Friar Friday. The Manager's Report with Mike Schilt is brought to you by San Diego County Credit Union. It's not big banking. It's better. Mike, it's been it was a long night last night. Obviously, the Padres weren't able to get the victory, and then they had to hop on the plane, fly here to Arizona, where they have three pretty important games remaining. On a night like this, where travel is rough, what goes into, you know, putting a lineup together today as you try to, you know, get guys prepared for the postseason, but also these three games you have in front?
Yeah, Tony, good talking to you guys. We'll run up pretty much the same lineup. I mean, we did get in later than typical, but we have a night game, and, you know, our guys are able to sleep in, and they're ready to go play. They all want to be in the lineup and get after it.
We're talking to Padres manager Mike Schilt here on 97.3 The Fan. Thanks so much for your time today. And you clinched on Tuesday. Guys have battled in the last two games. But there are still three games remaining in the regular season. So my question for you is, how do you avoid looking ahead to the decisions you have to make next week versus the decisions you have to make this weekend?
We take it day by day. We're clearly aware and getting prepared for next week, but you know, we still have work to be done these next three games to, you know, we'd really like to come in and be able to play in Petco to start the playoffs. So, you know, that's still on the table, and we're looking to take it off the table and make it happen.
Mike, I want to take you back to the beginning of this season. As you guys begin this journey, you were pretty adamant about, you know, locking in on some of the smaller things. And I remember at a point during the season when a lot of us on the outside were talking about it being a roller coaster, and you kind of pushed back against that. What gave you the confidence, even as this team was teetering, you know, back and forth between 500, that you knew that these guys would eventually get to the point that they're at now?
Great question. You know, I'm glad you asked it. You know, we'd like to snap our fingers and accelerate a lot of processes that need to be put into place and create some clarity and allow some learning curve with some players. I mean, if you look back at the off season, there was a lot of question marks. You know, no particular order. You know, you slash the payroll, you know, $90 million. You lose a lot of. It was over 600 quality innings, including the Cy Young guy and Blake and, you know, a lockdown closer and Josh and, you know, of course, Waka and Lugo and, you know, Nick Martinez and Luis Garcia, guys like that. And, you know, you lose a generational talent in Juan Soto. We got really confident. We had a great core, obviously, with Manny and Toddy and Bogey and Crony and you and, you know, that entire group. But, you know, plus you got a new manager. You got a new, you know, you got a fair amount of new staff members, including Victor Rodriguez, our hitting coach, and people that were on the staff last year that were in different spots, a couple. So, you know, and then you bring in new guys that have been great. Clearly, you know, Michael King and all the group from the Yankees, Higgy and Vasquez, Brito have contributed. Of course, we trade for Cease and Arise. Everybody knows kind of the story, but what I'm ultimately getting at, trying to paint the picture to a long answer to the question, is you know, there's a lot of variables. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of newness taking place, and like I said, I wish we could just snap our fingers and go, yeah, it's going to be fine. But the thing that I had confidence in during all that, so expecting some kind of learning curve or and quite candidly, you know, being able to stay at a place where we remain competitive with Toddy being out for a long period of time. Bogey being out for over 2 months, both of them over 2 months. Joe and and Darvish being out over 2 months apiece. Manny coming back off of surgery. You know, out of the core six group of guys, really only Crony was a guy that, you know, was able to, you know, be consistent and be healthy. So us holding it together with, you know, a rookie in the outfield that never played outfield before has clearly rewarded it and been great in Jackson. And you know, so us being able to keep it right there, I thought was pretty darn good, you know, and some ups and downs were, I just knew were going to take place. I mean, I think anybody that's been around the game, that's, at least for me, you know, would be naive to think otherwise. But really it was just that day-to-day commitment from the group of guys, which, what a special group, as we all know. You know, the staff, we do our part, but just that dedication to continual improvement and continue to work together to put together what we know is how to play the game of baseball and how to compete every day, give us our best chance of winning.
We're talking to Padres manager Mike Schilt here on 97.3 The Fan. You just mentioned Yu Darvish being back, and with Yu Darvish being back, you have some pretty good options in terms of the possible three-game wildcard series rotation. And I know you don't want to look ahead too much, but do you anticipate whoever does not make that wildcard rotation will be available from the bullpen?
I think we're a little early on the, you know, finalizing the roster. I think it's possible for sure. It's a fair question, but I don't have anything definitive for you right now.
Okay.
Mike Schilt joins us here on Gwen and Chris. And Mike, let's talk a little bit about Jackson. You get this young kid, and I think you kind of knew. You kind of were able to see him prior to this year and how he conducted himself. And I remember a conversation with you last year talking about how advanced in terms of mentally he was with the game. So you get this new piece, and you run him out there, and he's doing well. How much did you have to resist moving him up too quickly and giving him too much too fast, where it could have maybe, you know, been a detriment to him?
Another great question. Yeah, I got a real blessing to get to know Jackson the last couple of years through instructional leagues and big league camp, and then going to watch him play a little bit in the minor leagues. And really just getting to know him, and you know, the talent clearly it's pretty special, but it's the makeup, it's the mindset, it's the mental acumen to play the game. So we knew we were on having a really good kind of player. Him making that move to center field as easy as he made it is beyond impressive. You know, for me, I'm biased a little bit, but I don't think it's really a question that he's rookie of the year. But then to ultimately answer your question, Tony, is you know, me and Victor talked about it a fair amount. The good news is we've had a lengthy lineup. We had guys for a period of time. Didn't really, you know, obviously at the beginning of the season, you know, it made sense to hit him down the lineup and just let him get his bats and let him get his feet under. And he started performing more. You know, we did move him up a little bit, got him up just a hair and in that six range. And again, had conversations with Vic about it. And we just felt like, you know what, we got other guys that are carrying the mail that have been doing this, and he's in a good spot. He's performing. He's you know, he's doing what he needs to be doing. And then, you know, he kept doing it. And so looked up over in San Francisco, you know, a couple of weeks ago and said, you know what, this kid, he's been able to pretty much handle everything we put in front of him. So I think we put it in front of him appropriately. And then we slid him up to the fifth spot, and he's, you know, he's done what he's done. He's been able to take good at bats and perform.
We're talking to Padres manager Mike Schilt here tonight. And what is the status of Ha-Seong Kim and when he could potentially rejoin the team?
Yeah, you know what? I wish you had really, like, really super positive news. You know, he's just hadn't been able to be able to get over that hump with his throwing. The hitting's not a problem. That part's good. But, you know, him being able to consistently throw with any you know, aggressive, you know, anything behind it and intensity, is just hadn't happened. So, you know, we're still weighing what's taking place, but you know, right now he's not in a spot where we can count on him in the very near future.
Mike, is there a point where it's too late and you know that window closes?
There is. Okay. You know, we may be getting there. We'll know something here, you know, sooner than later.
Last one before we let you get out of here. I got to ask you. You mentioned Victor Rodriguez. You guys is the Padres' hitting coach. This offense is it has multi facets to it. Was this the plan all along to have an offense that, you know, can beat you in multiple ways, or did this kind of come about as, you know, everybody kind of found their footing and it's kind of blossomed into this?
Combination, really. I've known Victor a long time. We're very like-minded in how we see the game, how we want to play the game and compete offensively. We both have always been believers in a very holistic offense, which to me makes common sense. We've had conversations to you about it. You know, there's a lot of different ways to compete in this game and having many tools in your toolbox to be able to do it, because it's so situational based, and having the guys that can handle the bat. But our game's changed, and you don't have as many guys handle the bat. So the second part of that that's really been the biggest part, because we can have all the philosophy we want, and we can, you know, think about how we want to compete and play the game. But if you don't have players that can execute that, it's a lofty ideal that doesn't come to fruition. But and I give AJ credit for this. And all our players. I mean, you know, look, you're good on the line, but AJ, bringing a Rise in, Solano in, Peralta in, these are professional hitters that play the game, have bat control. But also give credit to, you know, Manny Profar has led the way for sure. Manny's been tremendous. We've all seen him move runners, seen him hit the ball the other way. Toddy, you know, walk off hit the other day in the right center. It's not always had to hit the ball the other way, as you know, but if the game calls for it, that's what you do. And the little things can lead to big things, and we've had some big things happen for sure as well. So, you know, it's been a combination between, you know, a belief system that we wanted to create, and Victor's done a great job of creating a clear identity with the group, and then the guys buying into it and having the ability to execute it.
Well, it's been a lot of fun to watch this year. Three games remaining. Division still, you know, a chance to be able to capture it. You need some help, but you know you have the city of San Diego behind you. Mike, appreciate you coming on here this morning after the long night, and good luck tonight.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Mike Schilt, the manager's report with Mike Schilt, is brought to you by San Diego County Credit Union. It's not big banking. It's better. Mike Schilt, once again, on Gwen and Chris. All right, let's get to break. Scraby and I will talk a little bit about what we just talked about with Mike Schilt on the other side. More Gwen and Chris. How about that? Back on air, 219. It's very rare we get back on air, like, on time. Usually we have taken the first segment long, but we actually got out on time. And we also started the show out with a bang.
Yeah.
Manager Mike Schilt jumped on with us after the long travel. Let me tell you, y'all, we landed at, I think, 2 a.m., 2:10.
You landed?
I landed at 2:10.
Wow, okay.
And then drove on over here. I mean, maybe it was like, no, we probably landed at like 1:55, 1:50. We were here at by like 2:20.
Oh, that's not so bad. I mean, it is bad. But a 20-minute airport drive is not too bad.
Yeah, no. That's you know, we stay relatively close to the airport, so by the time I got bags in the bed, like showered into, because I can't travel.
Oh, you're one of those guys.
Heck no, I can't get in the bed and like, nah, I can't do it. So I had to shower, out of the shower, in the bed. By 3:30.
Oh gosh. Well, let me. I got to ask about these trips, because I guess after the game, the players have to eat, right? Are they eating in the clubhouse?
Oh, yeah.
They eating on the plane?
No. So there's. So yeah. After every game, there's spread. Now you can choose not to eat the spread and gamble on what's going to be on the plane. But I don't suggest that's the exact move to go with. But yeah, here's the tough part. In September, when it's West Coast travel, you get a lot of these, you know, late games, regardless of whether it's a getaway day or not, because they figure you're not going far, right? You go on L.A. to Arizona, San Diego to L.A., like, you know, and so you get these late travel days. And so occasionally you get one like yesterday where the Dodgers are starting at 7:10, which is an old school thing. Game wasn't that long. I think it was 2:35
no,
or something like that.
But let me ask you this, too, because we didn't really get into this on the show, but I thought about it on the drive home last night. Like, why wasn't that game played earlier? It seems like whenever the Padres have a third game that's not a day game, it's usually like a 3:40 or 5:40, because the Dodgers had to leave, too. It makes no sense to me.
It was worse for them.
Yeah.
They had to go. They had to go farther. They had to go to Colorado.
Do you know why that game was played at 7:10?
I have no idea.
All right.
No idea. Well, but yesterday was Thursday, correct?
Yes.
I mean, the obvious answer is it's a September game against the Padres, a weekday. Are you going to draw more people at 1:10, or are you going to draw more people at 7:10?
Well, with the Dodgers stadium, you never know, Tony.
You're thinking about it from a single man's perspective. But
it's true.
For married man with kids.
It's 7:10, obviously.
Kids are going to school. You're not out of school at 1:10 most of the time. Or all the time. So
you're telling me that they're making decisions based upon money.
Crazy concept.
And
I know.
Not based upon player safety and health. Okay.
No, crazy concept.
Crazy
concept. But that's probably what they're doing. That's my guess.
That's a pretty good guess.
But we did have Mike Shields on, and I think probably the most newsworthy thing he said had to do with Ha-Sung Kim, and we have that sound for you right now.
What is the status of Ha-Sung Kim and when he could potentially rejoin the team?
Yeah, you know what? I wish you had really super positive news. He's just hadn't been able to be able to get over that hump with his throwing. The hitting's not a problem. That part's good, but him being able to consistently throw with any aggressive, anything behind it, and intensity is just hadn't happened. So we're still weighing what's taking place, but right now he's not in a spot where we can count on him in the very near future.
Mike, is there a point where it's too late and that window closes?
There is. Okay. We may be getting there. We'll know something here, sooner than later.
Yeah, I mean that's as clear cut of an answer as we got from him. Basically.
Yeah,
He hasn't been able to get over the hump of throwing. And on top of that, there is a time frame where it's getting too late, and then we might be on top of that now. And, you could almost hear it in his voice as he was answering that question. Like, yeah, it doesn't sound too good. So, and at this point, I can't be honest when I ask you this.
Yeah.
Have the Padres really slipped since he's been gone?
No,
no,
they haven't
either.
I think that it was possibly causing more headaches to figure out where to put him, and maybe that's just because I was debating it all day yesterday. But I think that it makes a lot of the decisions easier to know whether or not he's going to return at all in the postseason. Which again. To me, it sounds like he's probably not, but that's just me.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Again, I said from the very beginning that once they move Bogarts over there, they weren't doing that for a little bit of time. That they felt like they're going to move him. They're going to move him. Move him.
Yeah.
For the rest of the season. That's what I said when it happened.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to remain true. We'll see, though.
I mean, we were talking about this yesterday, and they were talking about on the roundtable. Like, I know you're not going to put a guy on a roster if he's injured, obviously. But number two, he's a really good clubhouse guy. You saw Manny FaceTiming him during the celebration to share that with him. Like, is there anything to his kind of presence and attitude that could help the team?
He can still be around and not be on the roster.
Okay, so that he can be. Okay, all right.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that is important, I think.
There's dudes sitting in that dugout all the time that ain't on the roster, postseason roster, that are watching games. It happens every year. So, yeah, no, he can be around. I don't think... if he can't play, I don't know. He's a great clubhouse guy, but they got a lot of great clubhouse guys.
They do.
I don't know that it's making a difference in terms of that. But Yeah, that was certainly newsworthy hearing that from Mike today. Padres, Diamondbacks, 6:40 matchup. Back to some regular starting times. It's crazy. 7:10 used to be like, I remember when I didn't want it to go to 6:40. Now I'm like, love it at 6:40.
Yeah, I know.
Padres, here's the playoff situation. Yu Darvish, Merrill Kelly. The Padres, the only one of those teams that have clinched a playoff spot, and of those, I'm thinking we're talking Diamondbacks, Braves, and Mets, would eliminate the Diamondbacks from contention from the top spot, top wild card spot. Meaning, with a win today, they can the Diamondbacks can no longer catch the Padres at the tippity top.
Yeah.
With an accompanying Mets loss in Milwaukee, the Padres would clinch the top spot, period.
So, basically, for them to come home, the Padres need to beat the Diamondbacks tonight and have the Mets lose tonight. And they would have a home series locked in.
That's the only way it can happen tonight.
Yes.
A win tonight, a Mets loss. Now, they can just win tonight and tomorrow and not really care what the Mets do, and they can clinch it as well. But a win tonight, Mets loss tonight, Padres clinch the top spot. And if that happens, I bet you some guys get some rest unless they're searching, they're hunting some numbers. Manny's hunting 30. So I don't think Manny's coming out to that at the very least gets done and to this top spot gets done. That's my guess.
You know what? When we talked to Manny last week, and this is kind of random, but he talked about how he's never hit 40 home runs in his career. And I just never really, I guess, realized that. And it proved to me, really, how hard it is to hit that many home runs. If Manny Machado's never reached a 40 home run point in his career, then that shows me how difficult it is. And why Shohei Ohtani hitting 50 or more is that much more impressive
than Ronald Acuna. In homers, the creme de la creme is 50. Like, you get to that number, you are in a class, a small class, right?
Yeah.
And so 40's a lot, too, though. But as Manny said in that interview, he didn't think he was going to get to 30. But here we are, one homer away. I thought he clicked it last night, but he caught it off the end a little bit in that Dodger game. But anyway, Padres win tonight. Mets lose tonight. Padres take the top spot. They will have home field advantage for the wild card round. Now, that in terms of who that matchup would be against, that's still to be determined.
Yeah.
Because the Diamondbacks are third now, huh?
Yes. They have not played well down the stretch here.
No, they have not played well. I almost, you know, there's another term that people would
you
use
wanted
for
to say
that I really wanted to use, but obviously we're on radio, so can't do that.
Good
job.
All
right. Let's step away. Let's get to break. Joe Musgrove, phenomenal. Until the two-run shot, and I would still say he had to threw the ball extremely well. But we saw some things that the Padres are uncharacteristic, or some uncharacteristic mistakes from the Padres last night that led to that big inning for the Dodgers. Maybe a little conceding that from the Padres end that, you know, the division may be out of touch. We'll talk a little bit about that on the other side. More Gwynn and Chris. 2:35 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr. Matthew Scraby, still getting used to some of these new songs coming in. Like, I didn't recognize that one either.
But trying to change it up a little bit, Tony.
Yeah, no, I'm not mad at it. I just, you know, still getting used to it. That's why it took me a little bit to figure out we were actually back.
You're not Pavlov's dog anymore, where you hear a certain song and you're like, oh, it's time to go.
Yeah, no, I'm not. You're reprogramming me as we speak. real quick, I might have that had brought to my attention. I might have said that the Padres division champs. I was talking really about the top wild card spot. I misspoken when I was talking to Mike, and I'm sure he knew that. That's why he didn't correct me on it. nonetheless, the Padres division champs obviously done their top wild card spot, though, very much alive and in their own hands. In terms of the division, I mean, Jackson talked a little bit about it after the game yesterday, and clearly, you know, it was something they had in mind. I think we heard that after they clinched the playoff spot on Tuesday, it was pretty clear in listening to them that they, you know, wanted to then set their sights on winning that division. That obviously is now off the table, and now you set your sights on getting home field advantage for the folks in San Diego. And I think it's pretty important for them. I mean, first of all, it would be bad practice to not end up having that happen, because that would mean they're not playing well going into the playoffs, right? I mean, you would have lost. I would assume, in order for them to get caught, they would most likely have to get swept here in Arizona. I don't know what the mathematics are on this, but I mean, how many games are up? 2.5
Let me just confirm.
3.5
I'm confirming, because I don't want to give out the wrong information when we're so close to the end of the season. But they are, the Padres are three games up.
Three games up.
Yeah.
So, they basically would have to get swept, and either the Mets or Arizona, who are the only teams that can catch up, I believe, at this point.
And the Braves, possibly.
And the Braves.
Well, they can't. I'm so confused with this Monday doubleheader. And
so it depends. I mean, I think the Braves, if they lose one, if any of them lose one, they can't catch them. So, I mean, the Padres need two victories. So ultimately, that's what will seal it. But either way, what I'm trying to say is it would be bad practice them losing 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 3 going into the playoffs and not securing that spot, and then having to travel to whatever said place. So it's Padres should lock this up. I have full confidence that they will.
Is there any sort of, and I think your answer is going to be no, but, and there's no doubt, I don't think, in their mind, because they know that they're a good team, but is there any sort of something in the back of their head thinking, we can't mess this up?
No, this, haven't been around this group all year. They're confident.
They are, yeah.
They don't think in the same way that we think. I think the more interesting story is if the Phillies can catch the Dodgers. The Phillies are playing the Nationals. The Dodgers are playing the Rockies. Now, we know, having gone up to Colorado, how things can go there.
Yeah.
I think Philly is, they didn't play yesterday, so they're probably a game back from the top spot, because that, you know, changes it. Just looking, you know, doing what I don't normally do, I'm gonna look ahead here. Like, let's say the Padres win that series, that wild card series, that determines whether the Padres are getting on a bus to just go up to LA, or they're getting on a plane to go to Philly.
I don't want to go to Philly. I don't want to go to Philly.
But I don't really matter. I don't really care who the Padres play in that first round, but I do think it would be a great storylines if the Mets are then coming to San Diego to.
Oh yeah, that would be an amazing storyline.
You know what I'm saying? Like, the Padres went into their building, smacked them, went on to the next round. They'll certainly be looking to do the same thing, but the Padres, I think, have a better team.
Yeah.
So I think there's a bunch of cool storylines, and the one thing that's usually not pertaining is the Padres. But the Padres have all of the cool storylines, I think, on the National League side of postseason play.
Can we just put into perspective how many games the Padres have actually won this year? Like, they have a chance to win, if they sweep this week, and they have a chance to win 94 games, which is top four in franchise history. And we're, I guess I don't think we're really, like, admiring the team like we should in regards to the franchise history. This is one of the best teams in Padres history.
And this goes to my thought on people who always want to, like, try to say the division doesn't matter. You know why we're not paying attention to it? To the 90-plus?
One wins because we didn't win the division?
Because we didn't win the division. Had this been a division winner, we'd be talking about this differently than we are right now. You know what I'm saying? But
I do.
We didn't. And so now we're just, you know, we're on to the next thing. All right, we got 92-3-4 wins. All right, who are we playing in the playoffs? Because there's nothing really to chat about after that. It's a great season.
Yeah.
But look back, you're like, man, they didn't even win their division with 94 wins. And that's, you know, that's a tribute to the division in itself. But still, like, we'd be talking about it different if this was the division, right?
Yes, Ben Higgins just texted me and said, Padres clinched the home field with two wins versus Arizona or one win versus Arizona plus
that.
One Mets loss.
He must have tuned in at some other point.
I'm just repeating it because I get all confused by these clinching scenarios. And he put it right there in a nice little text message
that.
For me.
We literally just said
it's
that.
It's okay, Ben. I appreciate the text message. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Ben.
You know, Jackson Merrill, you mentioned him. He said just getting the opportunity to play in the playoffs was our main goal. We wanted it to be the division we were pushing for, but sometimes stuff doesn't go your way. And all of the quotes that I read yesterday from Padres players and whoever was interviewed was basically the same thing. Like, the division wasn't an actual thing until maybe like 2 or 3 weeks ago. So winning the division would have been nice, as Jackson said, but all these guys are more focused on what's going to happen in the postseason. They would have liked, again, to win the division, but they're not angry or sad or frustrated that they didn't win the division, which I think is a really good sign.
Great. Ben, what we were really trying to figure out is if the Braves can actually catch the Padres at the top spot. That's what we were actually trying to figure out. So if you could help us out with that, that'd be great.
Them pretty much saying that like they wanted to win the division, that would have been icing on the cake for all these guys. And their focus is definitely on the playoffs. Their focus is on the postseason. And so I think, you know, because the division would have been hard to reach, I think it's a good thing for them to be able to focus on their seeding now and focus on that first round of the playoffs, because now they kind of know what's ahead for them.
I'll buy that.
Ooh,
I'll buy that.
Wow.
I'll buy that they, you know, you're shooting for the division at that point.
Uh-oh, did Ben text you?
He did. Yes, he answered what I really wanted. The Braves cannot catch the Padres. It's only the Mets and the Diamondbacks who can catch the Padres. So that's why a win today and a Mets loss ends that both. Thank you, Ben. He said you still seem confused, which is why he texted you about it. He didn't mean for you to read it out on the air.
I didn't know that.
It was for you, buddy.
I thought this was okay. Thank you, Ben. I appreciate the personal service because it would have been easier for me to understand if these games on Monday, like, because instead of everybody basically having five games left for two teams.
Math has never been our strong suit.
And
I'm okay with that. Yeah. Joe Musgrove, can we talk about him a little bit? I thought he was phenomenal. I mean, at one point, I think he had like 61 strikes to like 19 balls.
Yeah, I heard you guys saying that last night.
Which is crazy, right? And, you know, it just shows you, it speaks to a couple things, right? It speaks to how good he was in that game and how, I mean, just one pitch in the wrong spot to a team like that, it can change on you on a whim.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't remember what the pitch was that he ended up leaving out over the middle of the plate to Smith. But he hit it. And I knew, you know, from our angle, it's like off the bat, you can tell. But he hit his high. So, and it was to center field. So, you know, those ones are tougher to kind of read. But then I was watching him and the way he discarded the bat, I was like, oh, no. I think he got it. And then, you know, start watching Jackson and you're seeing him slow up and it's like, oh no.
It was a fastball and basically down the middle.
Talk about going from one end of like, okay, this Padres in control here to like boom. To the other end. It was quick.
I think the Dodgers just wanted to wrap up the division. They smelt blood in the water, but would you think that Mike Schilt would manage that differently if they were in the playoffs? I know Joe was going well. You just said it. He threw 61 to 9 balls.
There was nothing. Who had the first guy again? Was it a walk?
Yeah, Max Muncy walked.
Okay, so the pitch count's stupid low. Does the first bad thing that it has happened to him all game. Are you reacting to that in that moment? That's really all. That is what it would have had to be. First, he would have had to see. Mike Schilt would have had to seen, even though there was no signs of it, you would have had to seen this walk coming and already had somebody going. Because at that point, even after the walk, if you start to think, all right, well, maybe we should get somebody up. At that point, my man is already up. Will Smith is up. So, you know, I think, no. I don't think he would have managed that any different. I think he actually managed that like he would have. Right? I mean, he didn't. What? Joe got another batter?
He got Will Smith, Tommy Edman, and then Tanner Scott came in.
Yeah, so he didn't even get another batter. They gave up to Homer.
Tommy Edman
struck out. Edman, and then he bounced back and struck Edman out. So I think he managed it exactly how he probably would have. Went, got Scott, and then, you know, things kind of went from there.
He threw 85 pitches last night, 58 of those for strikes, so ratio's pretty good. I'm not going to even panic about Tanner Scott, you know?
Nobody is allowed to panic about anybody after the panic that they had for Robert Suarez, and then they were ready to put Tanner Scott in there, and now what, he had a bad night, now we're not ready to put him in there? Come on, y'all.
No one can give up runs for the rest of the year, Tony. We're looking at.
Okay, as long as we're being honest, that's fine. I could deal with that.
You know, I heard Craig and Annie talking about this on the drive-in, but they were talking about how it's so weird that during the playoffs, it doesn't matter who you are, you go 0-3 in one game, and you're a bum, and you're trash, and you're the worst player on the team. But Craig was saying basically, when you get to the postseason, you throw all that out, you cheer for your team and who you have out there, and you just hope for the best. I agree with him, because I don't want to nitpick every single little thing that happens throughout the postseason.
I have a crazy concept that I want you to hear out.
Okay.
Why not do that the whole time?
I mean, it makes sense to do that the whole time, because I did feel a little silly yesterday thinking about how panicked I was earlier in the year when things weren't going well, because, again, I reminded myself, and I've said this many times this year, it's very hard for me to stay in the moment.
The reality is it could have stayed that way all year long, right? But it didn't. It actually turned for a long period of time, and it still turned, quite frankly. So, you know, I'm just saying, if you should certainly be upset when things don't go your way, but I just think that, you know, it's better to cheer for your team and hope that they do well.
Yes, someone on the chat said Tanner Scott has been great for us every game until last night, but that's not, and last night wasn't even that big of a deal. I went back to look at his game log, and
he's fine.
Since September 1st, he has only given up an earned run in three games. And he's had 14 appearances. And when he does give up a run, the first time he gave up a run was September 10th against the Mariners. He didn't give up a run in the next two. Then he gave up one against the Astros on September 16th. And then went four games without giving up a run.
You have to look at the context of those runs, too. I mean, is he coming in with a two-run lead? Is he coming in behind?
True.
That matters. So, I mean, it's hard to just look at the number. I can just tell you from the eye test, he looks fine. He looks fine. Tanner was he had two-thirds of an inning, three hits. You know, one of those was unearned. You had a catcher's interference in there. You know, there's a lot of you know, cattywampus stuff happening in that game yesterday that the Padres don't normally do. When they just think about it, the first two games were really tight, and there was really no issues in terms of defense or any like decision making, right? They won one, they lost one, and then yesterday, that game gets a much bigger score, and you know, you can look at the two errors and realize how much they aided in the score getting away from the Padres like that.
Yeah. You were saying the uncharacteristic things that they did. Do you want to talk about that real quick?
I mean, the throw from the catcher's interference. And, you know, I get it. You know, you can't control it. But in some regards, like, that could end up mattering, right? Mm-hmm. If you get a catcher's interference in the eighth inning of a playoff game, that's going to matter. That could cost you a game. So those things, and again, you know, the game is so much different now because we're talking about stealing strikes, and catchers are closer now trying to make sure you steal the bottom of the zone and things of that nature. That's the risk you take when you're doing it. And it becomes a calculation of, can you take those kind of risks all the time, right? There are spots in the game where maybe, you know, I can't try to get that extra inch or two to try to steal these strikes, right? I think that's part of it, understanding when it is. And then obviously Toddy's throw. Like, It didn't lead to a run per se, but it put two runners in scoring position that ended up scoring on a hit the next pitch, right? As opposed to just the one guy in scoring position, you know?
Yeah, I do know that. Go ahead.
No.
The chat said, great regular season. Take that energy to the postseason and play it game by game. Go Padres.
Word up. I like it. That is the – you know, and the funny thing is that's been the team's mindset all year.
That's true.
That's all they talk about. They go on game by game. I mean, Mike Shields said it in our interview, game by game. That's how it's going to go. And
yeah,
that is how you are able to flush bad stuff when you're bad. That's how you're able to not allow yourself to think you're too good. It's just by moving on. You're not celebrating your four-hit night the night before. You on to the next. I got to try to get FOMO.
You baseball players have some of the best compartmentalization, I think, in all of sports.
You have to, dog. If you don't have that skill, you get eaten up in a season. Because now you, especially, you know, as humans, we typically hang on to the negative stuff a lot. So those 0-for-4s, which you will have a ton of, if you can't like learn how to like forget it and move on, that's a rabbit hole that you can't dig.
I get it. I mean, I get myself in those. Does that surprise you at all that I get into my rabbit holes?
But not at all.
You know, sometimes I'll say something on the show and I'll drive home and I'll think about it and then I start spiraling about it and then I tell myself, stop spiraling. It's going to be okay. Just move on. But it's really, I'm being genuine. It's got to be very hard for some of these guys to move on from bad days.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure those are the years that they struggle, is when it's harder to move on. And it's not a perfect science. I don't know anybody that has perfected it from that standpoint.
Yeah.
So, Padres back in action tonight. Yu Darvish toes the rubber. Merrill Kelly on the mound for the Diamondbacks. He's thrown the ball extremely well in his outings. So we'll see. The Padres have handled him pretty well, though. The Padres have handled a lot of pitchers well, but him in particular, I think the Padres have done a good job in.
Who do you think he looks like?
My man from Something About Mary.
Oh,
Woogie.
Yeah.
He looks like Woogie.
He does.
I can't remember
really
the actor's name, but that's what he looked like.
I think Woogie is the name for sure.
All right, let's get to break. Kirk Kinney on the other side, San Diego Union Tribune. He's got some thoughts on Mountain West, Pac-12, the showdown. Plus, who's going to be the quarterback this week? On the other side, more Gwen and Chris.